Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable Chief Justice David Gilbertson presiding, is now in session.
Please be seated. Good morning. The first case for oral argument this term is Amber, and I know I'm going to butcher this one. Mauricio? Thank you. Versus Dennis Dugard and others. Appellees, for the appellants, we have Mr. Robbie Roll, an attorney from Rapid City, and Ms. Kate Oliveri. Okay, all right. From Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Ms. Oliveri, I understand you'll be presenting this morning. All right, and for the appellees, we have Mr. Richard Williams and Ms. Holly Ferris. And Mr. Williams, I understand you'll be presenting this morning.
Yes, sir.
Very well. With that, Ms. Oliveri, you may proceed, and you have 20 minutes.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Kate Oliveri, and I represent the appellants. This case presents a taxpayer challenge to the disbursement of South Dakota taxpayer funds to the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium, an illegal interstate compact that's existence and operation violate the U.S. Constitution and South Dakota law. In 2009, the National Governors Association got together to create uniform national standards for education policies. The Department of Education announced Race to the Top grant funding conditioned on the extent to which a state demonstrated its commitment to adopting a set of common, high-quality standards. This commitment included participation in a consortium of states that was at the time working toward developing common K through 12 standards, and a commitment to adopting these standards by August 2, 2012. To be eligible for the funding, the state must participate in a consortium of states that included at least 15 states. Two consortia formed as a result of this, the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium, which we're discussing here, and a similar one called PARC. On June 9, 2010, South Dakota executed a Memorandum of Understanding binding South Dakota to the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium. 31 other states executed similar agreements. On June 15, 2010, the state of Washington, on behalf of the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium, submitted Race to the Top grant application with the goal to radically reshape education. On July 31, 2014, the South Dakota Secretary of Education signed an updated memorandum of agreement and understanding with the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium. This updated agreement required the payment of taxpayer dollars, South Dakota taxpayer dollars, to the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium. It further required that states, that South Dakota is, quote, agreeing to be bound by the governing board procedures and by all other decisions and actions of the governing board that are intended by the terms of the memorandum to bind the members. The Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium has a complex governance structure. It has a governing board, an executive committee, independent staffing, and a multi-million dollar budget, some of which comes from South Dakota taxpayer funds. In order for South Dakota to withdraw based on convenience from the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium, it must provide at least 9 months' notice and continue to pay the fees for an additional year. These fees are over $600,000 of South Dakota taxpayer funds. On January 30th, 2015, after South Dakota had already agreed to be bound to the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium, the consortium adopted the governing board procedures, which stated that the members cede control of their educational programs over to the consortium. The procedures require that the, quote, "decisions of the governing board shall be binding on all of the members." This includes that the state must administer certain tests that the consortium comes up with. And these assessments are computer adaptive tests, which means how you answer a question determines the next question you'll get. If student answers question A incorrectly, they will move to an easier question, question B. If a student answers question A correctly, they'll get a more difficult question, question C. So each student gets a different test based on how they answer the questions that adapt to their answers. The lower court erred by determining that the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium does not violate the Compact Clause of the United States Constitution. This clause states that no state shall, without the consent of Congress, enter into any agreement or compact with another state. Three types of compacts require authorization of Congress. First, compacts that threaten the authority of the U.S. government. Second, compacts that undermine the authority of the member states. And third, compacts that undermine the authority of non-member states. The Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium implicates all three of these. And importantly, under the multi-state tax case at the U.S. Supreme Court, the inquiry is one of potential rather than actual impact. So it must just have the potential to implicate one of these three requirements. And this is a point on which the lower court erred. The Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium threatens the authority of the U.S. Congress by undermining and attempting to evade over 50 years of statutory policy. Congress has enacted numerous statutes that limit the federal government's control over education, and specifically say that these decisions should be left to the states individually, that it's part of the state sovereignty that educational policies be determined by the state.
Well, the U.S. Supreme Court in the San Antonio case basically said the same thing. Doesn't that then give the states the freedom to contract amongst themselves to become, I believe it was one of the earlier justices said, the laboratories for the rest of the country?
Yes, Your Honor, and that goes to the second interest in the interstate compact, or that makes this a compact that implicates the compact clause, is that it undermines the sovereignty of its member states, and it requires them to cede that sovereignty that they have under federal law and the Supreme Court case law, because it's giving the South Dakota sovereignty to determine education over to the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium. It's binding policy, and
so you're saying they have sovereignty, but not enough sovereignty to where they can contract into a consortium. They don't have that type of sovereignty to where they have the ability to contract with other states?
Not in a binding interstate compact, and that's what the compact clause is designed to prevent. So because they're giving up state sovereignty by entering into this.
But the state isn't giving up sovereignty. The state can withdraw. I mean, there are, like any other contract, there may be consequences, but the state can withdraw.
But the state can't withdraw immediately. It requires at least 9 months' notice.
The state can't withdraw out of millions of contracts that it enters into immediately without there being consequences, but doesn't keep the state from withdrawing.
Here, though, this is more than just a consequence. This is forcing the state of South Dakota. If the state of South Dakota determines that the tests required, the standards required under the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium are harmful to its students, are bad for the students, and the state
has... Who's making this determination?
If South Dakota determines this. If South Dakota determines Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium tests that we are required to give are harmful to our students, they're impeding their educational abilities, however it decides, which the state has an important responsibility to the students.
Well, you say we, you're not a South Dakota resident.
I'm not a South Dakota resident, no.
I want to go back to your first argument, where you state that under the reading of the Constitution, Article 1, Section 10, this is a compact or an agreement, and it is prohibited without congressional approval. And you want us to say that this agreement fits within that, but under that language. But the U.S. Supreme Court has interpreted that language to limit it to instances where the state power is politically enhanced as opposed to the U.S. And are you saying that you want us to interpret this more broadly than the U.S. Supreme Court has?
No, Your Honor.
Well, then what's your argument?
The argument is that this does expand the sovereignty of this gives South Dakota control that it otherwise would not have as a sovereignty.
So you're not basing it on this on the straight language of Article 1, Section 10?
No, Your Honor. The Supreme Court has said not all interstate compacts must be approved
so
by
Congress.
So you didn't
say that in your briefs. You're conceding that right now.
Yes, Your Honor. Not all compacts require, but this is one that does. Compacts that threaten the sovereignty of the United States government.
Okay, how does this threaten the sovereignty of the United States government?
Because it attempts to circumvent federal law. Federal law prohibits the federal government from getting involved in controlling educational policies, and the Department of Education is getting involved in controlling state educational policies through its Race to the Top funding grants. And the focus is on the
Wait a minute. But states, we get road money from the federal government all the time also. I mean, just because they give a seed grant, state of South Dakota could develop its own assessment, could it not?
No, it could not.
We can't. We can't. Department of Education can't develop a test that it wants to administer.
No, because it ceded that control over to the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium.
Without that, if they decide they want to do their own test, they can develop one.
Yes, at this point, after they'd have to continue for a year at least, another educational year.
So what's wrong with contracting with someone to develop a test?
This isn't just contracting with somebody to develop a test. This is giving over the control to the test. If the member state South Dakota votes against the test that the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium comes up with, it is still bound by the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium. It's handing that control over to the consortium.
Are each of the tests individually adapted for each state? Doesn't the state have, isn't that one of the things they're contracting for?
The state still has to administer certain tests. And this goes to it. Well, the agreement doesn't explicitly say that. It would be impossible to comply with the agreement without administering the tests created by the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium. The state
But it doesn't say that.
The state has agreed to be bound by the governing board procedures. The governing procedures require the use of certain achievement standards. And then those achievement standards are certain test scores on the Smarter Balanced Consortium tests. So this is like most colleges require ACT or SAT test scores with your admission or your application to college. The colleges don't say you have to take the ACT, but by requiring those test scores, they're requiring you take the ACT or SAT. So this doesn't have a specific provision that says you must administer these tests, but it does have a specific provision that says you must meet these achievement standards, which are scoring, 100 to 10 on this test makes you hit this standard. So it would be, it doesn't explicitly say it, but it would be impossible to comply with the provisions because just like the ACT, you have to take the test to get your test score. That's exactly what's happening here, is they have to take the Smarter Balanced test in order to get the achievement standards.
If the state this afternoon decides they don't want to administer those tests, there may be some funds they have to pay under the contract, but there could not be an injunction against the state for not administering the test, could it?
The agreement does not allow the state to just step away.
Why not?
Can't, because then they'd be in breach of the contract.
Okay, what's the remedy?
The remedy would be any remedy available at contract law.
Which would be what?
It could be a performance of the contract.
Specific
performance, monetary damages. This hasn't happened yet, but the potential is still there that the state could be subject to this, to a breach of contract suit, because it has agreed, it has ceded that control over, and in ceding that control over, it has agreed to the limitation on the withdrawal from the consortium. And this goes to another point that I believe you brought up, is this is giving the state more power too, because it is allowing the state to direct the educational programs through its vote and membership of other states. So the dissenting states in this consortium are then being controlled by the majority of the states and how they want to sway education.
To follow up on one of Justice Severson's questions, say you prevail, the court rules in your favor, what happens then?
Then we'd have a court order saying that all taxpayer funds can immediately cease, and that there would be some court order allowing South Dakota to stop its participation in this.
Which would be then immediate? Not according to the compact, it would just simply terminate?
Yes.
Okay.
Have there been dissenting states in this consortium?
I'm not aware. I don't know. But again, that really doesn't matter, because under multi-state tax, it's the potential, not an actual.
I was just curious.
Yes.
Whether there were actually any states that dissented from. As I understand it, what the states are asking is for the development of an assessment. So they want this assessment. So it doesn't really make sense to me that they would dissent, since they're...
Well, but if they don't like the assessment they get, mm-hmm. they are then stuck with it for at least, with 9 months, it's at least an educational year,
so,
and the fees.
Under your remedy, under Chief Justice's question, if the state would be forced to pull out, they still need to, they decide they still need an assessment. Wouldn't it be very potential, or a big potential, the state costs would increase because they would have to develop their own assessment, which presumably the reason they joined this group is to get the benefit of the tests that's developed at a reasonable cost to them.
And I think that would be a policy decision that doesn't necessarily implicate the...
Well, I'm asking about, isn't it very possible that the taxpayer costs would increase potentially significantly?
Potentially, but there would still be ways to work together as states without violating the compact clause by not having a binding agreement. The mandatory nature and the inability to withdraw from this agreement is what makes it... So, curriculums, textbooks are used all over the United States, which, there's history books that are used everywhere, not just of, South Dakota. So educational standards can go across state lines, but you can't give up the state sovereignty to determine your educational.
Wait a minute. This isn't the standards. This is a test tool. That's what this case is about.
But you're agreeing to standards.
No, we're not. Not under this, not under the compact.
Under the compact, you do. You have to meet certain achievement standards. That's how you get to the requirement of the specific tests.
It comes to mind that this court administers a bar exam. Virtually all portions of the South Dakota bar exam are national questions. Virtually every state in the country does the same thing. What's the difference between us entering into a agreement to use the national testing for bar exams and what you're seeking to have struck down this morning.
You have the choice. You're not giving over the control to other states, to a board, to a consortium. You can withdraw. Pardon?
On the multiple guest bar exam, they grade them at the national level. We don't even grade them.
Right, and you can create agreements to have tests, but you're not giving over the control. If you decide, or the deciding authorities said we don't want to do this anymore, you step out. You're done. It's a case by case determination. You're making the decision here. The decisions aren't up to South Dakota. The decisions are up to the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium.
So your whole argument hinges on whether or not the state has ceded sovereignty. Your whole argument hinges on that?
No, because it also goes to evading federal statutory law that says that the federal government should stay out of state and local educational policies, and it also impacts the other states. So even with the possibility of the dissenters,
with the federal government, not with us. I mean, if you think there's a violation of federal law by the federal government in getting involved, that's an argument with them, not with us.
I see I'm out of time. May I
go ahead and
briefly
answer? Sure.
But it still implicates the just supremacy of the United States. Whether or not South Dakota is the one actually violating the federal law, it's still helping with this Smarter Balance Consortium, the Department of Education, to circumvent the federal law. So there's no requirement that South Dakota must be an actual violation of federal law. It just has to interfere with the just supremacy of the United States. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Your time has expired. Mr. Williams, you have 20 minutes.
This is actually a very simple case. It's not complicated. What we're dealing here with today is a contract between the South Dakota Department of Education and the Board of Regents of the University of California. And that contract develops in an economically in a more economical manner, an assessment that aligns to South Dakota's content standards in education that already exist. They've already been adopted by the state of South Dakota. Because it's simply a contract, it doesn't even involve the compact clause at all. As we agree with plaintiffs that in this case, as they've stated, education is an area of core state competence and concern that is not delegated to the federal government under the Constitution or a system of federalism. Plaintiffs' compact clause arguments fail there because as a threshold issue, in order to violate the compact clause, there must be an encroachment on federal supremacy. Because we all agree in this case that education is historically belongs to the state, there is no encroachment on federal supremacy.
She listed three criteria where you could violate it, not just the federal one that you're talking about. Is she correct?
No, Your Honor. And that's the interesting thing. If you look at U.S. Steel, U.S. Steel quite clearly sets out encroachment of federal supremacy as the issue. There are factors in there that guide whether that happens. But for areas that are historically state concerns, there's really no reason to even get into the factors. What they did in the multi-state tax case, U.S. Steel, is they said, how does this encroach on federal supremacy? And there were three different arguments that the plaintiffs put forth in that case under headings A, B, and C. The first one was interstate commerce. They said that's how it encroaches. The second one was foreign relations. They said that's how it encroaches. The third one was it encroaches on non-member states. When the court addressed the non-member states argument, they said, hey, wait a minute. You haven't showed how this even encroaches on federal supremacy. Unless you've shown us that it's a Commerce Clause problem or a problem with privileges and immunities, we don't even get to that issue.
Well, but maybe the U.S. Supreme Court only granted cert on the federal issue. I mean, she said there's two other factors out there that could bring about a violation of the Commerce Clause, and I'm sure she's going to get back up on rebuttal and say they're still there and you didn't address them.
And I'm going to say, my argument is that each case that you look at, going back through history, you look at Virginia versus Tennessee, you look at New York versus O'Neill, you look at New Hampshire versus Maine, and so forth. Every one of those has as the threshold issue that there must be an encroachment on federal supremacy. And each of the factors you look at only go toward whether that has occurred.
But counsel, isn't it the potential impact upon federal supremacy?
You know, and they do mention potential.
That's contrary to what you just stated. It's the potential for impact.
It is. They say that it's a potential impact. Yet when it goes to areas that are traditionally or historically a matter of state concern, even the guys out there that criticize U.S. Steel for being too lenient recognize that education is historically an area of state concern. And there's even commentary on that that would just flat out eliminate that from a compact clause analysis in total. So I think that the ultimate issue, the threshold issue, is does this encroach upon the supremacy of the United States? And when it's a matter of education, I think you can say no. That's a matter of traditional state concern. That starts and ends the compact clause analysis there. But if we were to get into the elements underneath U.S. Steel, I think that those would support this contract not being a compact subject to the compact clause. Judge Borna also held that SDCL 13355 does not violate state statute, or I'm sorry, that the contract or the assessment in this case does not violate 13355 being the assessment. That's an umbrella term. It's an assessment. There's no requirement under that statute that each student be given the exact same test questions. If the legislature wanted that, the legislature could have written in each student must be given the same test questions. That's not what the legislature did. It used the broader term assessment. Going back to...
What does... That has puzzled me somewhat. What's the difference between test and assessment?
So plaintiff's argument essentially is that under 13355, it states that the school district must administer the same assessment to all students grade 3 through 8 and 11. What they didn't say is that the same test questions must be given to those students. What the assessment must measure pursuant to that statute is the academic process of each student. It would make no sense if to read the statute as saying these same test questions must be given to all students in grade 3 through 8 and 11. You'd be giving the same test questions to an 11th grader as you'd be giving to a third grader, and that simply isn't going to measure the academic process or progress of each student. So the way to read this to not end in an absurd result is that the assessment is a blueprint for the test to be given, which we have here that's provided to us through this contract. And that blueprint provides a testing mechanism that measures the academic progress of each student. Turning back quickly, if I could, to the Judge Barnett's decision. With regard to the compact clause, it was sort of a two-prong approach. The first one was whether this was a compact at all. And Judge Barnett found that it was. We asked the court today to find that it was not a compact, subject to a compact clause analysis.
Did you file a notice of review on that?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
And secondly, going to the next prong, we would ask that a court finds that it is a compact that is not subject to, it's not requiring congressional consent under the compacts clause. When you go to determine whether or not something's in a compact at all, you look at the case of Northeast Bancorp, and there's four factors on there. The first factor being a joint organization or body that regulates a multi-state function. The second factor, that the agreement is not conditioned on actions by the other states. The third factor is no state is prevented from modifying or repealing their own laws unilaterally. And four, there is no requirement that requires reciprocation of the agreement. I don't believe that the contract in this case matches any one of those factors. There's no joint organization established to regulate a multi-state function. As we've discussed, state educational content standards are set by the state of South Dakota. In this case, what we have is a contract for an assessment that aligns or corresponds to those standards, state standards. Members that, or individuals that sign a contract with Regents of California are able to go and make sure that the assessment aligns back to content standards. It's not the other way around. The assessment doesn't drive the content standards because the content standards are already set by the state.
Don't you have to teach to the test, though, counsel? I mean, we've had a discussion about the bar examination, and so certainly you're going to have some set curriculum that you're going to study in order to be able to pass the assessment.
Exactly. And that curriculum is set by the state legislature and the Board of Education in South Dakota. The assessment has to align to it, but yes. But ultimately what the state standards are is set by the state of South Dakota. The board just ensures, or each member of the board just ensures, that their own state's test is aligning to the standards already set by the state. And to the extent that that test doesn't meet those standards anymore, the state is free to leave. There's no unilateral, or there's no multi-state function being regulated. There's no condition on action by other states. South Dakota can give the test. It cannot give the test. It has no bearing on whether North Dakota gives the test. If North Dakota gives the test, no bearing on South Dakota. There's not even communication between those two states regarding whether they give the test or not. It's really irrelevant.
But is the state ceding its sovereignty by entering into this agreement?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. The sovereignty is jealously guarded by the state legislature. And this agreement allows the state to get out of this agreement at any time should it violate state law, should the state no longer provide authority, or should the state no longer provide funding. Whatever this test turns out to be fails to meet this, to align with the state content standards, the state can simply leave. And that's without notice. It's reasonable notice. But that's necessarily without notice. If the state decides there's no more funding, they're out of it. And that's without notice, without repercussions, or reasonable notice. So when it comes to...
Without repercussions, what can you say about that? So there's no liability and contract for breach?
Absolutely not. When it comes to the state's withdrawal for lack of authority or lack of funding, the state's out free and clear. And you can see that in the termination sections of the MOU. So if the authority's gone from the state, if the funding's gone from the state, that clause says you guys are free to leave at any time without paying any fines, contract is null and void, just give us whatever reasonable notice you can. So that sovereign authority is always going to be maintained by the state right there, not given up, because the contract recognizes it resides with the legislature, and as we all know, state sovereignty resides with the legislature, and it cannot be waived without legislative authority. Prong three is that no state is prevented from modifying or repealing its own laws unilaterally. We just discussed how that all happened. Four, as there's no requirement that requires reciprocation, no state is required to give this contract. If you look at, there's reciprocation in such things as the driver's licensing compact or the compact that we talked about, it was talked about in Gray, where if you get a speeding ticket in Nebraska, you have to communicate that to South Dakota and vice versa. There's no agreement in this compact at all that the states have any reciprocal agreements. So I do not believe, or the state's position is, that this isn't a contract or this isn't a compact at all. It's simply a contract for services from the regions of California and UCLA. However, if the court were to find that it is subject to a compact clause analysis, we go back to United States Steel Court. I think that's one of the main cases on this that we'd have to look at today. And again, there's that threshold issue of whether there's been an encroachment on federal supremacy. All of the factors in that case and the cases that talk about it go to advise the decision maker of whether there's been such an encroachment. And in this case, that has not happened because commentators on this, the cases, you look at United States versus Lopez, Supreme Court's clearly said that education is historically and traditionally a core matter for the states. And I think when you get into that realm of education, you can pretty much flat out say it's not an encroachment on federal supremacy, unless you can name something else that can use steel. They try to say Commerce Clause, they try to say privileges and immunities. But without such an encroachment, without showing that federal encroachment, the court basically shot down those arguments. Nonetheless, if we look at those prongs, prong one would be the state's not exercising any powers that it did not otherwise have. The state in this instance is clearly setting its educational content standards. Always has that power, as everybody agrees, that is a matter for the states. Clearly the state can contract for a product. Before this, the state used to contract with Pearson. Now, Pearson was an off-the-shelf test for which we didn't have much input. But there's clearly power to contract for an assessment. There's power to create an educational assessment. There's power to set content standards. There's no powers being exercised here that couldn't ordinarily. Prong two, the state did not cede its sovereignty by sending this agreement. As the courts recognize, with any contract, there are going to be certain restrictions on your ability to get out. But sovereignty is a different issue. Sovereignty in this case is maintained by the state legislature. The contract recognizes it in that whenever, as we sit here today, there's actually an education bill being discussed in this building. And at today, as we sit here, the legislature could say, you know what, we're no longer participating with UCLA, the Board of Regents, on this deal. We're changing our assessment. We're doing whatever we want to do. We're going a totally different direction. And the minute they do that, and that's signed by the governor, this contract is null and void, no repercussions against the state. That sovereignty is being acted upon today as we sit here. The agreement does not infringe on the sovereignty of non-participating states.
Take it up there if you want.
Because like South Dakota, they're operating under the same contract terms. They have the same abilities to get out. Their legislatures can do the same. They can set their own content standards. It's just not infringing on them. When we talked about this earlier, we talked about a number of different agreements that came before. Right now, we're only talking about the 2014 agreement with the Board of Regents. There's no more RTT grant funding for this. It's simply the states making their own payment. There were 30-some states in the original agreements. We're down to 15. States, if you look at Judge Barnett's decision on page 17 at the top, he's listed a number of states that got out of the previous arrangements. There's not such a coercive effect that states are finding it necessary to enter into a similar agreement with the Board of Regents of California. Each state has their own can do their own assessment. In this case, the board, South Dakota Department of Education, found it more economically feasible and have the ability to input what that assessment looks like in this case. Turning briefly back to, well, for those reasons, we don't think it's a compact, subject to a compact clause analysis. And secondly, we would assert that if it was, it doesn't need congressional approval under the contracts clause. Interestingly enough, on plaintiff's reply brief, page 5, they state that, well, even if it were just a contract with the Board of Regents of California, it would still implicate the compacts clause agreement or section of the Constitution. We say, well, that's crazy. That would mean that every agreement that the state of South Dakota entered into, or an arm of state of South Dakota entered into with a different state or arm of that state, would require congressional approval. For instance, if SDSU wanted to come into an agreement with the University of Nebraska to agree on an agricultural project, they would need the consent of Congress. Well, that makes no sense. It's an absurd result. There are certain contracts that states can enter into with other states or other arms of the states that simply don't implicate the compact clause, and that's when there's no encroachment on federal supremacy. Turning to the state law argument, I believe we discussed that pretty well, that we don't believe that this is an assessment, or that an academic assessment in this case requires individual test questions to be the same. A traditional statutory analysis of that would end up being an absurd result if you applied that as requested by plaintiffs. In conclusion, we would ask that this court find that the lower court erred by finding that this was a compact, subject to a compact clause analysis. Secondly, we would ask the court to agree with the lower court that even if it were a compact, it does not require the consent of Congress. And third, we would ask the court to determine, as the lower court did, that the assessment procured in this instance does not violate South Dakota law 13355. And with that, I would close unless there's any other questions.
Thank you, Mr. Williams.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Ms. Oliveri, you have 10 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. First, the three instances implicating federal sovereignty, implicating member state sovereignty, and implicating non-member state sovereignty are all discussed in multi-state They discuss that it does not implicate federal sovereignty in that case, and then they move on and say these factual circumstances don't implicate these other things either. They're discussed. It's not a federal sovereignty isn't implicated, so we're just going to step back and ignore the rest of this. They go through all three of the steps. The appellee stated that South Dakota cannot give the test if it wants. But that's just not true under the agreement. The terms of the agreement say that you're bound by the decisions of the governing board. The governing board stated you must meet these achievement standards, and those achievement standards are certain scores on certain tests.
But the state can pull out of it.
That's another follow-up I wanted to have. The state can pull out of it. The only way to terminate based on convenience is with 9 months' notice and continuing to pay the fees.
But that isn't ceding sovereignty.
It is under multi-state tax. Multi-state tax stated that one of the reasons for why this didn't implicate the state sovereignty was because, this is a quote, each state retains complete freedom to adopt or reject the rules, which is not the case here, and each state is free to withdraw at any time. South Dakota cannot withdraw at any time. South Dakota...
Sure they can. There's a penalty to pay, but they can withdraw.
They can give notice of withdrawal and then withdraw 9 months later, which is different. That's not at any time. That's 9 months down the road. And even the... and I apologize for not knowing the exact amount of notice, but even if it's done by South Dakota law and the legislature passed it, there's still a notice requirement. I believe it's 30 days, but there is still a notice requirement there. It's South Dakota cannot just withdraw at any time under the agreement.
So under your rationale, if the state entered into a contract with a contractor to build a highway, buy cement, whatever, we're ceding state sovereignty?
No, Your Honor. That doesn't implicate any of the prongs necessary here. It doesn't need the U.S. congressional approval under
the
contract.
We can't get out of the contract at any time without paying a penalty. Under your rationale, that's ceding sovereignty.
But there's a difference there. Education policy is fundamentally left up to the states. The states and
so are highways.
And you can withdraw and face the consequences there, but this compact requires the consent of Congress because of the other implications that the agreement has, it implicates federal law and the federal statutory provisions, which are discussed in pages 14 to 17 of our brief, that say this is left exclusively to the states and local government. So the federal government has made through statutes, case law also says the same. But for this point, Congress has said this is left up to the states, and this consortium circumvents that federal determination that this is left up to the states, and the federal government needs to stay out of it.
Oh, wait a minute, race to the top funding that's not an implication anymore, is it? That's done.
It's done, but to incentivize the creation of these state consortia without, in contradiction or at least in an attempt to circumvent the will of Congress, implicates federal sovereignty provisions. And to discuss the point with California, the absurdities in the hypotheticals that went aren't implicated here because we agree not every interstate compact requires congressional approval. So if, so things can fall outside of that. So you don't need to take it to that absurdity level. But the University of California, one, it's an arm of the state of California. So it would be a bilateral interstate compact is still implicated under the compact clause. And the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium is governed by its member states. They're ceding the control to the member states. It's not the University of California at this point helps administer, but it's the Smarter Balance Assessment Consortium that has the power here. And the memoranda for South Dakota that joined the Smarter Balance Assessment Consortium, it specifically says the university is not a member of the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium. So that, again, even if you
so
determine...
Who's the agreement with them? With the state contracted with UCLA. So if you're saying this is a compact which is, and they're not a member of the governing board, how is it implicated with the other states? We don't have an agreement with the other states.
It's implicated through the University of California. And again, this is really it's kind of a non-point, because even if you determine it's just the University of California, the University of California is an arm of the state of California, so the compact clause is still implicated here. If there are no further questions.
Council, have these challenges been brought in other states, and what has been the result? Can you summarize that, please?
They were successfully brought in Missouri, and then the state withdrew, and so the appeal then was dismissed because the state went through the withdrawal process. It was also brought in North Dakota, and the state there's an appeal pending there, but the state has withdrawn in North Dakota as well. So that will likely moot the issue.
And have you brought these challenges where other courts have found that it was not a compact?
Yes.
And have courts also found that it did not require congressional authority?
The Missouri court found that it was an interstate compact that violated the compact clause. The North Dakota court, again, this is on appeal now, found that it was not. And then in West Virginia, there was a petition to try to go directly to the Supreme Court, so that wasn't analyzed under the same standards if it had gone through the lower court process. It was an extreme remedy that in West Virginia, the court.
So this would be the first state where you've gotten the issue in front of the court of last resort.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Again, because the states, Missouri and North Dakota, have both now withdrawn. There is an appeal, like I said, right now there's an appeal pending in North Dakota, but I think the issue is likely moot at this point because...
So they withdrew. So that's within their power.
They gave a notice of withdrawal that's not effective for... they gave the notice on September 12th, and it's not effective until June 1st the following year. So June 1st, 2017. September 12th, 2016, they gave the notice that they were going to withdraw. So that's still an entire educational year that they are bound by the requirements of the Smarter Balance Consortium after they indicated that they no longer want to be.
And again, you were saying this is taxpayer money, but one of your remedies could actually conceptually increase the cost to the taxpayers of South Dakota if we have to develop our own test.
I mean, the South Dakota is free to spend its taxpayer money as long as it doesn't violate laws. And so here, I don't think the amount is necessarily at issue. It's the implications to the ceding sovereignty.
Issue when you made it a point of $600,000. So I'm just saying that's one side, but the other side is it could be more than that if we had to develop our own test.
And
that was decided by the Secretary of Education that this was the most beneficial way of proceeding.
And the financial issue, I brought that up for taxpayer standing. That was the primary purpose. But there's also the fact that after the state indicates its notice of withdrawal, it still has to pay fees that it's saying it doesn't, taxpayer money that it doesn't want to pay.
So there are only lawsuits like this in three states plus South Dakota?
Yes, and Missouri and West Virginia are over
North Dakota.
There's a motion to dismiss pending. Okay.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court will be in recess for 10 minutes.